Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello.
Hey.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Chefology.
Yay, yay.
You're here with your chefologist. I'm Gracie Mack. That's Josh DeVetta.
Hey.
And that's Asabi Goodman.
Hi, people.
And this week, ladies and gents, and every beautiful person in between, we're talking about jazz.
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 Flute.
Yes. Yeah, soft J sometimes.
And all that jazz.
And yeah, all and that all jazz.
That's right. I requested this episode.
This is a Gracie Mack episode.
Because the last one for RuPaul's, I was like, eh.
Yeah. And this week, Josh is like, oh, yeah, I think that's a jazz song.
Yeah.
Asabi knows it all.
And I was thinking, you know, like I probably should have prepared something, you know. Like I love jazz, but I didn't prepare anything. So I'm just going to go off the cuff and
there
see
you
how
go.
I go.
Grace has Grace has a degree in the genre as
now
well.
Now the beginning of jazz. So there's a lot of awesome documentaries you can watch. Often Winter Marsalis comes up in them. It's a documentary about jazz. If for those of you who don't know, it's an excellent, excellent trumpet player and band leader from America who is a huge jazz historian. He's just really immersed in the history of music that he plays. So we're going all the way back to the 1800s, and this is a place called Congress Square in New Orleans in Louisiana. And this is, what's that quote that I found by Winton? You know what? I'm not going to scroll quick enough. Oh my God, I found it. Every strand of American music comes directly from Congo Square.
Yes, it does.
Okay. Now, this is just very quick. You know, we're not going to dip into the history for too long, but let's give you a quick overview of what we're going to be talking about with our playlist choices today. Obviously it's the 1800s. There's a huge slave population in the South in Louisiana. There's also free people of color. So this is kind of mixture. There's the Creole term that started. I'm sorry, I can't help it. Whenever I hear.
Lady Mama.
So there's a mixture of a lot of slaves, but also some free people of color. And there was the mayor made this ordinance that there's only certain areas, like I think at the back of the town, that people of color could congregate in large groups. And so a Sunday, day of rest, they would congregate in this area called Congress Square. And there was a lot of slaves that, for some reason, like the slave owners in Louisiana didn't try and squash their African roots as much as other places. It was just not as much of an iron fist, I guess, they were ruling with at that time in Louisiana. And so so a lot of their culture, they carried with them, the languages, the music, so much of the history. And so they would congregate in Congress Square, and it'd be this big party. They could suddenly express this culture that they had been ripped away from and been suppressed for so long. And so it's this really joyous experience, and it was a lot, mainly rhythm-based, you know, a lot of African drums. And so that's the basis of a lot of this music that we hear today. It's come from this like huge self-expression of in the face of oppression, but it's one day a week. And so then fast forward to the 1900s, and we've got this guy called Buddy Bolden, who was a cornet player, which is kind of like a trumpet, very similar to a trumpet. He, I think he was in a marching band or some sort of like big band, stage band, and he decided to start kind of mess with the melody a little bit. And this is the first instance that we know about historically of improvising a melody. And so Buddy Bolden is often talked about as the father of jazz, because improvisation is the framework of jazz. That's really the main thing that we're talking about here. And now we've gone through so many different stages since then, and now we're in this world of all of that influencing our musicians today. And really, our musicians that call themselves jazz musicians today are often fusion musicians. You know, they take a lot of different styles and they put them together. And that's my favorite thing about this music. There's like the swing era that some people think of with jazz. You know, it's kind of like if you're into pop, whatever you think of as pop music, it depends on your experience, how you grew up, your age, all that kind of stuff. It's similar with jazz. You know, it's like some people think of Ella Fitzgerald, that's jazz. Some people think of Charlie Parker as that's jazz, you know. So it really depends on your interpretation of it. It's a huge umbrella that we're going to talk about today.
So people hear Lady Gaga's Cheek to Cheek and go, that's jazz.
That is jazz.
Nobody, I don't know what it ever is, but she's got it.
So there you go. That's a little brief history.
Fantastic.
On our beautiful jazz that we're going to talk about today. Stay tuned, everyone. We'll be back soon. Hello, hello, welcome back. Hey, 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 we're talking about jazz. I'm very excited. Thanks. Now, Josh.
Yes.
I saw the fear in your eyes.
Yes. you probably felt the fear too.
Well, we're talking a little bit about this off air, about, you know, Josh was sharing that this feeling of like elitism that comes from jazz music or jazz musicians.
Yeah.
If you haven't come from that school of training, sometimes there is this this feeling of exclusivity,
yeah,
which is just, it's really sad because it's not at all the point of the music, you know. But yeah, I think when you get, it's the same in the classical world, like whenever you get to a music that can very easily be highly technical, people start to use that as like a way to stroke their ego.
Sure.
And raise themselves above you. And it's such a shame because it's like a music born out of oppression. And now it's like skinny white dudes being like, you didn't play those changes, right, bro?
So many.
Dude, why'd you do this
night
to the 13th? Why don't you just like stay on the 7th? Like,
yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Sort of thing.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Well, no, I'm very, like, I was just a little bit, I had like a small moment of insecurity. Because, like, these are probably all songs that I've sung, you know, multiple times at gigs, all that kind of stuff. And I've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But I know that there's like a whole, like, it's probably similar to my take on pop music, where it's just like I know so much about that genre of music. So when people go, oh yeah, like Britney Spears, I'm like, yeah, but like, do you actually know the Britney Spears, like the influence and the cultural impact?
Yeah, like, yeah, it's exactly so, like, yeah, that
exactly,
it's the same.
Yeah, exactly. Right, so I've chosen, so I've gone like real like American songbook standards, probably so for people out there, you don't have to feel bad about liking these songs. Unless it's Autumn Leaves. No, I'm just No, just joking. So the first one off the bat, because I just love to perform this, it's called Orange Coloured Sky.
Oh yeah, I love
a beautiful standard. Yeah, yeah. I performed it last year at the Jazz Club, actually, funnily
did
enough.
You?
Yeah, Sabi and I did the same gig with with our Yas Queen.
Yeah.
Oh, true.
So, Paula and T and Mel and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're just talking like everyone knows them. They're good friends and colleagues of ours. Yeah. And we did, so it was actually like, I will have to say it actually was my idea. I was in my own show because it was around Christmas time. I had done Man with the Bag, and that's the one that goes up, oh Mr. Kringle, you're soon gonna jingle the bells that'll tingle all your troubles away. Everybody's waiting for the man with the bag, cause Christmas is coming again. And I was like, this sounds like Orange Coloured Sky, the same progression.
Man with the Bag has a very different meaning in my house.
Yeah
I was about to say, what?
And I said to Paula one night, I was like, can we like mix Orange Coloured Sky and then go back into the chorus of Man with the Bag?
Right.
And she was like, yeah, she goes, yeah, it actually is based on the same progression as Orange Coloured Sky, let's do it. And then we did it in my show, and then Paul was like, hey, can you come sing in our show? Can we just do Man with the Bag?
Nice.
With Orange Coloured Sky? Like, yeah, and I love it. Like, I was walking along, minding my business.
So good.
Went out of that orange coloured sky, flash, bam, alakazam, wonderful you came by. And I just love that. I think when I hear someone do this song really, really well, like, it makes me happy to hear it too. It's like, because it really is a crowd pleaser. I think when people hear, I was walking along, people start clapping, sort of thing, and then flash, bam, bam,
It's got some showmanship written
it does.
In the song,
and I think that's
cool.
My favorite type of jazz, that showman, almost big band like thing,
totally.
Where like, you know, you really do have like a big cohort of musos around you, and you're just adding your element to the whole thing, you know.
Yeah.
So that's song number one. Tick. There we go.
Orange, well done.
Orange Coloured Sky.
Love it.
All right. Next. A classic, if you will. We were just talking about this song. I actually wrote Autumn Leaves in this one as well. And I wrote it for the nostalgia because I remember back when I was in university, I studied pop music at uni, and for your final year, you had to do a final recital. I think most degrees have that, like
you had to do a final
concert as your final
don't have
assessment.
That
performance degree.
Engineering does not
have. You don't have a final thing where you like showcase your work.
Actually, we did.
No, yeah. It would have been or when someone does their thesis design. Or their kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, in performance degrees, yes, you have your final recital. And anyway, but even musos had to have their own final recital as well. So what they would do is they would, so if you were studying bass, you would have to like get a band of people to play with you and a singer, but you had to have moments that you were showing off your bass chops. That's how you got assessed.
So
I was brought in to play keys because I play piano as well. That's a secret. Dirty secret. I'm like, I know. Don't ask me to play for your gigs. I'll definitely say no. But anyway, so I had to play keys and sing. And he was like, oh, I want to do Autumn Leaves and like do like a, because he wanted to show how versatile he was. So we did like from Red Hot Chili Peppers to a pop song to like Tell Me Something Good to Autumn Leaves. Like it was a very like eclectic playlist or set list. And so I actually had to learn it. And I remember I had to play the chord progression and everything like that. And I remember going, because I hadn't really like had a big foray into jazz then. But then once I did it, I was like, oh, maybe I can sing this stuff, like sort of thing. Mm. I mean, it's been a journey since, to say the least. But so the falling leaves around. And I like that you can have many different takes on this song as well. Yeah. Like the way that we did it was that we started off with just piano and myself, and then we went into time after one chorus sort of thing. Mm. And then the bass, because you can have a walking bass in it if you wanted to. You could, like, there's so many different ways you can approach the song. But we approached it, you had to start off really acoustic and then bring in the time. That was do we know who the original artist of it, because it's been covered that
well it's time. Written by Joseph Cosma, but that's, he's like one. A Tim Panelli dude,
right?
Like it's not, he wasn't that original artist, but yeah. So the, I mean, the most famous one, so hard to say.
Does Ella sing the song?
I think she has at some point, but it's not like a signature song of hers.
No, it's not, because I like her one, I like her song, her cover of Someone to Watch Over Me, I think.
Well, Miles Davis, his version is very famous of Autumn Leaves.
That's
a big one. Like he's playing trumpet. But
oh yeah, that's what, that's the version that I hear in my head.
Yeah.
I think Eva Cassidy did a version.
Oh, she did. Yeah, but it wasn't like a jazz style. No, it was like a jazz guitar.
Love her cover of Fields of Gold. Anyway,
it's so pretty.
All right. So we've got Orange Colored Sky. Stay in the orange theme. Autumn Leaves. And so the next one, this is actually one of my favorite standards of all time, and I've never, I'm like still waiting for like the right moment to perform this, and I don't know when it's going to be, but it'll happen one day. And it's the classic My Funny Valentine.
Oh, beautiful.
I've heard, now we've heard many, many, many renditions.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the Ella one because I love the one. I also love Frank Sinatra's one too, because it's like a totally different,
it's attached to your face.
It's attached to my head.
We got Madonna mics, guys. Don't worry about it.
Anyway, yeah, so I like Frankie's one too, because it's like a totally like different spin where it's like, you know, he's singing about a woman, or you could do the opposite where the woman's singing about the man.
Mm.
I mean, I don't really live in that binary, so it could be about anybody. But with that, I just love that it's that whole thing. Well, it really does pose a question, because it's like, do I love this person because they make me laugh, or do they make me feel great, or but they happen to be ugly?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Like, I've always felt that way as well. Like, she just called him ugly.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'm like, is this, and then I look at myself.
Yeah, I don't think it's a romantic message, really.
And I think, what if if anyone ever dedicated the song to me, I'd probably take it really personally. But I love, like, the melody is so, like, it's, well, the versions that I like of it, because there's many different versions of the song as well, is that melancholic feeling that you get at the beginning of it. I love that, where it's just piano. In fact, if I ever did it myself, I would just do it with piano, possibly strings in the back sort of thing, just because she loves the drama.
That's pretty heavy if you're going to stick some strings back.
Yeah, she lives for
the drama. Like, ignore the rest of the other instruments that it might have. Just straight for a string ensemble.
Like, she's bougie.
Strip back.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I'm bougie. I can afford. I buy Dysons and Nutribullets. I'm very bougie. Anyway, I digress. But I love the whole What's it? Is your figure less than Greek?
Yes.
Is your mouth a little weak when you open it to speak? Are you smart?
Yeah, like she's a dumb teeth.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. You ugly.
Have
you
any
dumb.
Redeeming qualities?
You was not kind. You was not smart. You was not important.
Oh my god, my friend and I used to say that to each other all the time. Just like hold each other's faces. You is kind.
Yeah. But I love it, because it's a melody that's not intuitive. Like you really, I find I have to really think about that melody. Like similar to like when you like in musical theater land, when you sing Sondheim, it's so against your natural inclination to what you hear in your ear, which is very. Like, so it's a great challenge to have, you know. But then at the end, I just love each day is Valentine's Day, and I think that's really nice because really,
yeah, nice, yeah, sweet resolution.
So
at the end.
Maybe it's that, but maybe if you put a more positive spin on it, it's like to the world standards, you're maybe not like a supermodel. You know, gorgeous Instagram, if we put it into modern times, Instagram looking, you know, model sort of thing.
You need a filter.
Yeah, sort of thing. But I think you're beautiful, and that's why I think every day is Valentine's Day with you. And then I go, okay, maybe I can use that positive intent for the
whatever
song.
Whatever you need to get you through. You know what I mean?
Like, maybe you just don't say anything at
that's
all.
That's true,
you know?
At all. But I kind of imagine myself, like, and I've sung this song, and there's just one spotlight on me with the piano and the strings, apparently, in the background. And then
no drums, no bass.
And because I'm just who I am, I know I'm gonna do a 5-note descend on it. I'll just go, each day is Valentine's Day. I know that's how I'll end it. And I won't even think about it, it'll happen as well.
Oh. I remember that in like first year jazz course where teacher was like, yeah, a bit too many melismas. It's like so offended. How dare you?
Well,
this is not R&B 101. This is jazz 101.
But you know what's really, really interesting is that, like, for me, like, I guess, like, melismatic anything is a natural inclination, but it's ornamental. It's not fundamental. That's how I think about it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And I think because I never ever plan riffs. Like, I never sit down and go, I'm going to riff here.
Mm.
Yep. I literally just, like, feel it, and then whatever happens, happens sort of thing. And so when people have to think about riffing, they probably think that you're, like, you've planned everything out, and they think that it's more gratuitous than what it probably is.
Well, like with that particular teacher, it was, you know, it gets into this whole argument of like fit to your genre or not, and
sure.
and it's, you know, I suppose like when you're in university, it's, you know, they're critiquing you on an art form, which is already a strange concept,
yes.
You know, because it's already so heavily based in just opinion.
Yeah, well, I guess for it to be a tertiary education sort of thing, they have a criteria.
Yeah, they
to
have
follow,
to meet. Yeah, they have to give you like basically a crash course in all the things that tick the boxes. And then you can go with your degree and go do what you actually want to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was meaning like that's not appropriate for a jazz stylized vocal.
Yeah.
Because it's not. It's not seen as it comes from the pop idiom. But you know, whatever.
But you know, I'm a fusion.
I'm a fusion.
Yeah. Fusion.
I'm one of those modern jazz guys
exactly.
You talked about earlier.
You call it jazz.
I sing jazz in bamboo hoop earrings.
Right? Banji.
Right. Yeah, that's actually good. But that's three choices. I didn't realize that my section was going to be longer than this. I thought I was going to be done in 4 minutes, but I'll just I love also Lullaby of Birdland.
Okay,
like so many covers of it. I actually recently was just first in Mariah Carey's cover of this.
Oh, does she have a cover?
And no. Sorry. And it was a recording that she did back in 2014 for the Jazz Festival. I think it was the New Orleans Jazz Festival.
What the fuck did she do that?
No, she was asked to headline.
That's like, it's such a shame. Like, what? I think Elton John headlined one of the New Orleans Jazz Fests. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Why
well,
are you
and
doing
Christina Aguilera is a headlined a
oh
year
God.
As well.
Oh
like,
God.
It's just a,
why?
A
turn
it's just, yeah.
Yeah, it's,
well,
I think,
it's
I think well, it's a ticket thing, I think, as
yeah,
well.
Totally.
Because
yeah.
really, like, I'm sure there's a huge market out there for jazz.
It's crossover.
But the crossover, I guess, makes them more money because they're
totally,
like, yeah.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. It gives them like figures.
Or that's why you
have
someone like Kendrick Lamar playing at the Byron Blues Festival.
Yeah,
all that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah.
Or, anyway,
we do go.
What's your last one?
Yeah, so Lullaby Birdland. And I just love, you could fit many songs in that progression too. Like you could do, like, but Lullaby of Birdland, like musically, sounded like a mashup of many jazz standards that I know of in my life. Like that's what it feels like to me. Similar to Orange Colored Sky, you know, you could fit, or Fly Me. Oh, we'll talk about that later. Like just you could definitely do a mashup, like a Glee mashup of many songs in that progression. And the last one I chose, because I love Sammy Davis Jr.'s version of this, which is Lady is the Tramp.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, nice.
Which I love, but also.
But you don't like Lady Gaga.
No,
no.
Gracie doesn't like Lady
Gaga. Oh, right. Okay.
I actually like the Tony Bennett Lady Gaga of this song. I think we've talked about this when we talked about just the Lady Gaga episode, how her Cheek to Cheek album was not really a jazz.
I was just saying, no, like, I mean, it is, you know, like, it's like,
it's song
huge
book,
big band arrangements and, you know, like, it's all of the
incredible
boxes ticks. I just don't like that approach to jazz that's really like theater jazz.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't like how she sounded.
And
basically,
a lot of musical theater actors and actresses on Broadway, when they do like a gig at like Joe's Pub or Studio 54 Below and all that, they, their tone naturally inclines them to sing jazz standards as well. Like Megan Hilty from Smash.
I love Megan Hilty.
She can sing all that kind of shit. Like,
very talented.
Yeah, I love that song. Chase All Your Fears Away. Get Happy. Like, she does an incredible version of that. But yeah, Ladies and Tramp, I just love it. I mean, I like it as a duet. I also like it when someone just sings it. Like,
just as a solo
sort of thing. I like that it references New York really, really well, like in that way, which I think is a really, really cool thing. And I just like that he's like basically saying, like, I have a high maintenance girl that I date, but she knows she's high maintenance too. Yeah, she's like, I'm starving.
It's the original version of Uptown Girl.
Yeah, truly. So yeah, they're my choices.
Amazing.
Lovely.
Thank you. That was nice to hear. You know, you didn't smash through it because you were invested in your choice there.
I was,
yeah,
especially my Funny Valentine, apparently. Or else
you've got a whole production going on for that one.
Mostly do, yes. That's welcome to my life. Right?
Well, stay tuned, everyone. We'll be back soon with the Southeast choices.
I have to talk. That's right. There we go. All right. Well, if you've been lying under the pillow whilst I've been talking, good
crying
for you.
You dove under.
Good for you.
Once
well,
you heard on and leave. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. All the jazz musos started hiding. They were just like, this is not jazz. No, I'm just joking. All right. Well, I've contributed to the playlist.
Well done.
Which will be available straight after this episode, which is great. And now we're going to hear what Asabi chose.
Yes, hello.
And I just have to say that Asabi sounds beautiful singing jazz. I have witnessed it firsthand.
Thank you.
Same.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Actually, I've also heard Gracie sing jazz,
yes,
and it's beautiful
as well.
Yes,
she's amazing
as well.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Girl, Grace is like, what?
You've been at my gigs?
I've stalked you online.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Lots of online
Gracie Mac music. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to keep it quite short because also, like Josh, I'm not a learned jazz musician. I'm just black.
Like the highest credential of all.
So I can sing this shit. So my first tune is Take the A-Train by Duke Ellington. Now, this is a Billy Strayhorn tune who wrote the music, 1939. And it's one of the Duke Ellington Orchestra's signature tunes. It was featured in the film Revel with Beverly, where the vocalist, so there are lyrics to that tune. They were written by Joya Sherrill, a young 20-something who was just extremely poised. And so Duke asked her to come along and sing and record the song. But in the film, Revel with Beverly, the vocalist is Betty Roche. Now, originally, this tune, when Billy Strayhorn wrote it, he didn't like it because he thought it sounded too similar to a Fletcher Henderson arrangement, who was a jazz musician back in the day. So he crumpled it up and he threw it away. And Duke fished it out and was like, no, I like it. Let's sing this song. And it's based on the directions that Ellington gave to Strayhorn to get to his home. So you take the A train to
get to Sugar Hill way up in
Harlem. That's right.
No way. That's I didn't know right. there was directions.
Yeah, there was the new A train. So it's actually a subway train. But yeah, so that's Take the A Train. And I do enjoy this song. It is just really beautiful. And Duke's on piano and he's got his whole orchestra behind him. Because it is sort of big band leaning, but I consider it is a jazz standard. It's a jazz standard.
Totally, yeah. Have you heard the Ella version?
I have not heard the Ella version. I need to listen to that though. Yeah, I do like
similar like vibe. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Like tempo and stuff. But she does like this. She does her Ella thing.
Yeah.
She does
like she's a big like old the queen thing. Of scat.
Yeah, yeah, she is, totally is, yeah.
Well, and speaking of Ella, my second song is Mr. Paganini.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, if you can't sing it, then you have to swing it. Which was introduced to me by Gracie Mac. When
it was introduced to me by Emily.
Really?
Yeah. I've never heard it before.
Oh, I had no idea.
It was
idea.
On the show that we did together with her.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Love Emily.
I just did the chart for her, but I didn't.
No,
I
you did it for me.
Oh, for you. Thank
yeah,
you.
You did it for me.
Yeah, right.
But
I
you
just,
were the one
I just learned it from your teacher telling
that's
me
really
to do
funny.
The chart.
Yeah. I thought.
Who's Emily? Sorry.
Oh, sorry. So Emily is she's another local singer that I work with in one of my tribute shows.
Do I know her?
I don't think you do.
Okay. Wait, does she know me? I'm joking. That was just
that's a great thing to say.
I just Asami's my head like, just exploded.
That's like I don't look. I'm looked at.
And we're done. Thank you.
Yeah. I don't add people on Facebook. They add me.
Yeah.
Anyway. So this song, it's one of Ella's signature songs. And it was one of the first songs that she recorded. She recorded this back in 1936. And I'm always shocked at the fact that Ella was singing in 1936, knowing that she was still alive in 2007. She was 90 in 2007.
Yeah, crazy.
Holy moly.
Yeah, you know, so just to, and I've heard the song and it's amazing. And I'm like, damn, she was singing in 1936. Anyway, it's considered one of her signature songs. She performed it at almost every live concert. And it's one of the first songs to feature her scat. And if you've ever listened to an Ella song, she scats, even if it's just like three beats of a scat, she scats in almost everything that she does. It's pretty iconic and it's amazing to listen to her and how she does that. But Ella to me is one of the great crooners of the age, and I just love how versatile she is with her voice and the range of her voice. Like I'm actually learning one of her songs at the moment. Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most, you know that song?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm learning that song, and it starts down on this low E flat sort of note and it goes all the way up to I think it hits a C5, but it's just a wide range of notes in the song, and it's a beautiful, beautiful song, and I think she's an amazing singer. So this song was also recorded by Chaka Khan and Natalie Cole for a tribute to Ella. There was an album that they put out for her 90th birthday. Mm-hmm. And then when they performed the tribute concert, the song was performed by Natalie Cole and Patty Austin. So I don't know where Chaka Khan was. Maybe she was off doing some Chaka stuff. That's right, Chaka. So this was in 2007 when Ella turned 90. But I love this song because it, you know, it kind of, Mr. Paganini, please play my rhapsody. And it's just this really beautiful suite. And then it goes into, and if you cannot sing it, you'll simply have to.
I fucking hate this song.
Yeah.
This is bringing it back to me during that show. Like,
yeah. We did actually perform it.
Ella's excellent at so many things, but she did so many like hammy songs.
Yeah.
And she just like churned them out. She got so many songs. I'm like, girl, what were you thinking?
Well, she won a Grammy for her live performance of Mac the Knife in Germany.
Yeah.
Where she forgot the freaking lyrics. She forgot the lyrics and just made shit up.
But she just made shit up.
Yeah.
Like,
she just
like
made
she
it
like
up.
Made up some.
Yeah. She just sang whatever came to or didn't come. I don't know. She just made shit up. And she won a Grammy. And I was like, fuck. So that's how you win it. You just make shit up.
It's the power of Ella.
Yeah, she's just pretty fucking amazing. Anyway, that's Mr. Paganini. Done with that. I love that song because of the difference, the transition in it going from such a crooning song to this like heavy scat, and then it comes right back down. So yeah, it's just, I think it's beautiful. Gracie hates it, but I think it's beautiful. Anyway. My next tune is Take Five by the Dave Brubeck Quartet.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, 1959 on their Time Out album. So this was back when government actually paid musicians to travel.
No.
Right? Yeah, it doesn't happen anymore. And Dave was challenged to compose an album that used different time signatures. So he'd just come back from Europe and he'd heard a bunch of these different sort of beats and melodies. And so he was given a grant, I guess, what would have been equivalent to a grant, to write an album of like some different time signatures. Mm. So he had this amazing drummer, Joe Morello, who was like, you know, really well-versed in the 5/4 time signature. And so he really wanted a song where he could, you know, feature his drumming. And so Dave went to his sax player, Paul Desmond, and said, hey, I want you to write a tune to feature Joe. And so Paul wrote Take Five, which is in the 5/4, so it's a you've got this the piano and bass playing that over and over throughout the song, so they're vamping that over and over, and then it features the saxophone quite heavily. So the saxophone plays the melody throughout the song, which makes sense since it was written by a sax player. And then towards the end, you've got this epic drum solo that just comes in as you know, it's just like, what the hell? It's so
it's really cool. You like works with accents instead of like flashy chops.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like so many drum solos are. It's amazing.
Accents are the best thing ever.
Yeah, but it's like he just does that. Effective. He's not. Absolutely.
Yeah, it sounds simplistic, but it's not.
Yeah.
So now, one of the funny things about it though, because you know we're so used to hearing like 3/4 or 4/4, and working in 5/4 was quite difficult for the band. So much so that when they started recording it, after about 40 minutes, they had so many failed attempts to stay on time and to stay with each other that their producers was like, yeah, that's it. We're done.
Oh my God, we're
going to call it. and that was in June. And so they took a break for like a week and then they came back in July and they finished recording it. But so like, I mean, these are guys that are, you know, professional jazz musicians and they still struggled with that.
Well, it's so crazy to hear that because like Take Five now is what you teach.
Yeah.
Anyone who who's trying to get anyone, even primary school, it's like because it's such a well-known riff and they make it groove so well, it's like you can get 5/4 so easily from that. Like all jazz musicians starting in 5 go to that tune, so they didn't have that reference tune.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's right.
I remember when I first learnt Take Five just on the piano and just like the inclination of like, oh, it's so hard to play in 5/4. Mm. Like,
well, the way they do it, they split it up so it's like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2,
yeah.
3.
Well, that, yeah. Once I realized, so I actually didn't end up counting in 5.
Yeah.
I just had to hear the and that's how I actually was able to get the timing instead than like counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah. This was one of the first.
That's the way you make it groove.
Yeah.
Because if you try to count like or in 7 one, or 9 two, three, or whatever four, odd thing five, up, then, then you get stuck into those beats.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then if you make a groove over it, like the clave, like they're using, suddenly it has a feel to it and you can get into it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like this was the first song that I learned to play on my saxophone when I was in like grade 6. Yeah.
It's a tricky song for the first song. Like,
well, because I learned to play by ear first,
and
then started working with a teacher once I got to school. Because I didn't go to school until I was in grade 6. No, anyway,
I
love
school and bitches. Like, yeah,
I grew up in the country. We didn't have school. No. So Take Five, and it's one of my dad's favorite albums as well. So I really, and one of the funny things about this song is that there are lyrics to it. So Don Partridge wrote lyrics in 1972. I don't know what they are, but I know that there's a woman who's famous for singing them, and I can't remember her name, but she
I don't know who that is, but I know Al Jarreau is quite famous for his version of it.
Okay.
There's always like that always happens, like some singer who they're usually amazing, but they write lyrics and they're so lame.
Yeah.
So like they're so
why did
lame.
You come along and
take five
and it's like it's dumb. Yeah. Nobody ever I've never actually seen anybody perform it with lyrics, but anyway.
Yeah, neither have I.
Yeah. And never do it. Just don't. All right.
You hear that, people?
Jazz singers, if you're out there, please do not sing this song.
I mean, do what you want, but it's like, but I won't enjoy it.
We will throw daggers at you if
we
come to
your gig.
We're going
to talk about you on this podcast.
That's right. I digress. digress. All right, my next tune is Song for My Father by the Horace Silver Quintet. I love, love, love this tune. I just think so there are lyrics to this as well. And I sing this for my dad a lot. So I do sing it to him. So this is from 1964 from the album Song for My Father. It has a bossa nova feel to it, which is just, and it features this ostinato bass line that
ostinato.
Just
ostinato. Kind
of, yes, I know. I'm using some big words. Yeah, so it's a bass rap. And then it's got solos by Silver on piano and his sax player Joe Henderson, and it's just, you know, a beautiful song, and it's like do 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 do, and I just, it's just so smooth, and I think the lyrics are by Ellen May, and I don't know if I'm saying this right. Shoshoyan, that sounds familiar. I've found a couple of different sets of lyrics for this song. I think one was originally written by Horace Silver, and I'm like,
Really? I've never heard it sung.
Oh yeah, and then the Leon Thomas is the version that I'm used to hearing with lyrics. So if there were ever a man who was generous,
I have.
What am
I talking about? I have totally heard that. Yeah. But I've never live. I mean, like, I've never seen it at a gig done.
Oh really? Well, you haven't come to enough of my gigs then. Anyway, I
let's just roast each other about gig attendance.
Yeah.
Sounds like fun.
Right? Anyway, this song was written for his father, who actually features on the album cover. So, and it's one of Silver's best known compositions. It is a jazz standard. It's been, like, as of 2014, there were over 180 recordings of this song. Like, it's just, it's one of those songs that's just super, super popular. All right. So that's my fourth choice. My last choice is, this song has lots of meaning to probably me and my little brother. And it's called Welcome to the St. James Club by the Rippingtons. Do you know that song?
No.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song. This is the song. So when we were kids, the song came out in 1990, so I think it was my first year in high school or my last year in middle school. So the way my dad would wake us up in the morning, he would go to the bottom of the stairs. So our rooms were upstairs in the house, and he'd go to the bottom of the stairs, and he would yell, "Wake up!" And then he'd start playing this song super loud throughout the whole freaking house. And we just hear this dun 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 dun, you know, and it's like, oh my god, all right, we're awake. And it was such an upbeat and a happy sort of tune, you know. And so we were just like, oh, okay, we're going to start the day. Yay. And I think that's why I'm a morning person to this day.
Wow.
I just remember being woken up by such fun, happy, upbeat music, jazz music. Yay. So this is off the album Welcome to the St. James Club, which was their fourth studio album, 1990. And it does kind of, it kicks off in a kind of mellow mood. And then as it goes into the chorus, does that thing again. It's got this Caribbean beat to it. It's got horns, and it's got this sort of chorusy vocal, like it's a really light chorusy vocal scat that's kind of singing the melody throughout. But it's just a fun, upbeat, uplifting song. It was the number one album on the Billboard Jazz chart, and I think it did well for the Rippingtons. They're a really well-known smooth jazz band over in the U.S. Yeah, they're huge. And that's it. Those are my choices.
How amazing.
Josh is like, I do not know what you just talked about.
No, I'm just on Spotify going, oh yeah, Horace Silver, yes. Herbie Hancock, yeah.
Familiar.
Yeah. Something about wake up in the morning. Just like, yeah. It is great. Well, thank you so much for your choice, this is Sabi. I can't wait to listen to these on the playlist. No, I am. I'm being serious.
Okay.
And we're just going to have a small little break. And when we come back, we're going to listen to what Gracie Mac chose. All right? Stay tuned.
And welcome back,
yes!
Ladies and gentlemen. You had tuned in to another fine episode of Chefology with myself, Asabi Goodman, Josh DeVetta, and the beautiful Gracie Mack. Today, we are talking all things jazz. And I would like to turn it over to Miss Gracie Mack, our resident jazz specialist, to find out what...
Scholar of the genre.
Musicologist, our jazz musicologist.
I was thinking that on the way here. I was like, in this room I am that. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Because in so many other rooms I'm not.
Oh, my God. It's like when... I would like to think that I'm a very highly intelligent human being.
Yeah.
Except when it comes to flat pack. Like putting together flat pack furniture. I feel so dumb that I can't put it together.
And then I
go, is this how my friends feel when they're around me? Like just dumb all the time?
Wow. Next time you need to put a flat pack together, call a bitch. I can put that. I'm
flat
an engineer.
Pack, waffles and fried chicken. I'm
We're going to have a day.
Yes.
Anyway, Gracie Mack.
All right.
Do tell.
All right.
Tell.
So I decided to go, I mean, you know, I have a great love of jazz and in a lot of its forms, but it hasn't been, you know, my world since uni, you know, like it was very jazz heavy for 3 years. And then I started to branch out and get into all the other music that I love and sort of using the elements of jazz that I learned to help make that music more cohesive and all that kind of stuff. So I figured that you guys would go for probably 30s to 60s era, which you pretty much did apart from that one Rippington's one I'm eager to hear. But so I figured I'd go new school. I figured that a lot of people have a big misunderstanding of, I've heard like a lot of, it's always like a middle-aged dad, let's be real. It's always like, isn't jazz dead? They always like to say that, and I'll be like, I don't want to give you any of my emotional time to have this discussion with you, because this clearly isn't a discussion. But the actual discussion around that is like, yeah, if you're talking about jazz when it was pop music, when it was swing, totally. Like, that's not the pop music anymore. So, yeah. But jazz at its core is this improvisational music that, just like hip-hop, is this expression of culture. It's a cultural movement, not just a musical movement. And that's my favorite thing about it. It's also my favorite thing about hip-hop and why I love them so much. So my first song from a band called Snarky Puppy. You guys familiar with them?
Yes.
Heard of them? Yeah.
Very much.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've chosen...
I think I'll be doing a lot of head shaking.
Yeah.
That's good. I'm getting educated.
Yeah. Parents, because my dad is a huge jazz aficionado. Like, if the two of you met, you would have a field day chatting with each other. And my dad freaking loves Snarky Puppy.
Oh, great.
Yeah. He's
okay,
seen
Papa.
Them. Yeah.
That sounds great.
He goes on a jazz cruise every year. So.
Yeah, jazz cruise, I would imagine, would be really stuffy. Is it not stuffy?
No, because it's mostly smooth jazz.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I don't know. Is that stuffy? I don't know.
Like, I'm just thinking my mom used to go on jazz cruises when I was a kid, and they were always so boring. And it was like, it was like an old jazz band. Everyone in the jazz band is super old, like 80 plus.
No, I guess it's like a lot of the new people, a lot of the newer jazz musicians.
Oh, cool.
And they get to hang
with them.
That's
a cool jazz cruise.
Yeah, so they actually get to meet the musicians and hang with the musicians as well.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, that's way better than mom's stuffy.
Off the docks of Sydney. Oh, yeah. This is in the Caribbean.
So, yeah.
So it's already better.
Yeah, already. Yeah. Way
okay.
better.
Anyway.
So Snarky Puppy. The song I've chosen is Lingus, which is a huge song. If you guys are Snarky Puppy fans, you would know them. It's from a huge album from 2014 called We Like It Here. It's a group's 9th album. They're a pretty prolific group. They usually have about 10 members, but it'll range from a lot of different things. And the members are all just motherfuckers. Like, they're all amazing in their own right, and they all have their own grooves, and they come together and they do these albums together, and they're always amazing. Mm. So on this particular track, there's 14 people playing. We got 4 keyboards. Okay, 4. One of those is a Fender Rhodes, so like 3 keyboards and a Rhodes. 3 guitars, percussionist, drummer, bass, 2 trumpets, 2 saxes.
That's a little too much.
Excess.
I mean, Josh is like, what the fuck?
I'm just trying to figure out the budget. I was like, are they getting $5 each to play?
So this is why jazz is dead.
it's not economical.
So this, you can look up this on YouTube. The band has many times, and this is one of their most famous ones, they record these albums in a live studio session. So it's a live session that they've uploaded to YouTube, and there's an audience sitting there with headphones on.
Oh, wow.
In on the session.
Yep.
So sometimes you hear a little bit of clapping in amongst the tracks and whatever. But it's really exciting because everyone is such a motherfucker in the band, and the music is so intensely arranged, but there's also all these improvisational elements where people get to showcase their musical voices. They all just do it in like the one take in one session together, and they film it, and so you can see everyone's reaction. So it's a really like energetic, exciting way to record, and it really translates into the
music. Do they dub over mistakes, or is it just like in?
They just do it.
They don't make mistakes.
It's improvisation. It's jazz.
Well, so there is some improvisation, and of course there'd be some things that they weren't happy with, but it's like part of the whole thing. Yeah. You know?
They don't have a singer, do they?
No. So it's an instrumental band.
Sure.
They did have like the band leader Michael League is a guy who started it, and he is the bass player and sometimes plays Moog bass as well. Mm-hmm. But he described the band as a pop band that improvises a lot without vocals, which I mean, like someone who likes pop. Band. Like, Josh, if you were to listen to this song, you'd be like, this ain't a pop group. Okay? Yeah, like, it's definitely not.
And if I start singing pop, are you going to embrace me or hate me?
They're going to kick you out. You may know these guys. They've done two albums where they had, called Family Dinner Volume 1 and Volume 2, where they had guest vocalists coming on each song.
Amazing.
Which is really cool because it was like very different flavors, and it was like sometimes the vocalist's own song or they'd figure out a song together. And Layla Hathaway made a very famous one where she is improvising and she sings a chord. You guys seen that one?
I haven't.
It's a pretty famous. I'm surprised you haven't.
She did the rounds ages ago.
Well, sort of. I mean, like, she's, you know, Donny Hathaway. It's his daughter, Layla Hathaway.
Yeah, yeah.
And she sings a song and then she's like improvising, and it's really cool. And it's like, it's a very like R&B soul influenced song. And then she, sings like a 3-note chord while she's improvising, and then does a little riff and goes back again.
I've seen that video a few times.
Yeah. I would be surprised if you hadn't. It has done that so many times. So that's Snarky Puppy with her. And so that's where a lot of people would probably know them from.
Okay.
And the band lose their minds. They're like, wah! And they watch her do it. And that's like another one of those live recorded songs. Sessions.
Yeah, wow.
So, but this particular song, Lingus, a lot of people who are fans of the band would know there's this very famous synth solo in it by Corey Henry, the keyboard player. It's really, really long. It's quite a long solo, and it builds up really massively. It's super intense, and it's a very famous solo known throughout the fans of Snarky Puppy.
Oh, I know who Layla Hathaway is. Right. Yeah, I saw her. She's on this. I watched this show called The Terrell Show on YouTube.
Okay.
And he's famous for this game called Song Association, where he says a word they have to think of the song in 10 seconds.
Yeah. Okay.
And she's on that show. That's why I know.
Yeah. She has her own singing career. She's great. She's really good. Anyway, that's my first choice. Okay. Nice. So keeping it up with this. So all of these artists I've chosen, they're current jazz artists making new huge project music, always super innovative. So that band was very fusion jazz. They've got a lot of different elements coming in, but there's a lot of improvisation as well. This next is a singer called Jasmia Horn. So she is from Dallas, Texas. She attended performing arts schools all her life, and then she won a bunch of awards. She won the Sarah Vaughan International Jazz Vocal Competition, Thelonious Monk Institute International Jazz Competition, Downbeat Magazine's Rising Star. She's just been on the up from basically 2010 and released two albums, 2017 and 2019. And this song is from her 2019 album, Love and Liberation. It's called Free Your Mind. It's a song that she wrote. It's kind of like a more traditional style jazz, I suppose, than certainly since my last one, since Lingus, because it's like kind of up-tempo swing. Mm-hmm. It's a song that she wrote. It's kind of got these arranged hits behind her in the band. She has this... she has this really great video on YouTube that you guys should check out, where she's talking about, she describes Ella Fitzgerald's style of scatting, and she explains how it's influenced her and the phrasing and that kind of stuff, just kind of breaking it down, just really, like, really simply. And then she sings like Blue Sky, is a very famous song of Ella Fitzgerald, and explains how that's influenced her style. But she is just a powerhouse. Like, she's so she's African-American, and she's got this beautiful presence when she kind of reminds me of Erykah Badu. Not in looks, but just in the way she holds herself. She's got this real presence, like womanly, centered thing. And then she just like shreds. She scats amazingly, and she also belts. It's just this really free, like totally from the soul singing. It's so, so enjoyable to hear. I'm a huge fan of hers. She's really, really cool. I discovered her before I went to jazz school and just have been obsessed ever since. She's brought out two albums since then, which has been much to my happiness. In 2017, she came to Australia and she was featured in the Generations in Jazz Comp. It's like a thing that James Morrison, famous trumpet player here, runs, and there's like a competition or whatever, and she was featured in there. So she played with like a bunch of Australian artists. Pretty cool.
That would have been cool for them too.
Yeah, absolutely. And she's been nominated for two Grammys for Best Jazz Vocal Album for her two albums that she's put out. And she's like, I think we're the same age actually, which is depressing. But anyway. So there you go. My next one.
Beautiful.
My next one is a song called Truth, and it's by saxophonist Kamasi Washington.
Yes, know him
well. Yeah. Yes, I've been knows him. So this is from his 2017 EP called Harmony of Difference, and it's a concept EP. It's six tracks, and the sixth one, which I've chosen, Truth, is a culmination of all the different themes that we've heard in the five previous tracks. This song is like half the length of the album. Like, it's an EP, so it's not a long.
So it's like 20 minutes.
It's at least 10.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's basically the same length as all the other songs combined. Yeah. Because it's this it's this huge thematic build up from all the other songs. It's really beautiful. Yeah. It's stunning. It's like it's a real sit back, and you could do other things where you did it, or you could just go internalize and really feel the song. It's a really gentle, beautiful song. It has guitars and synths and strings, and it has this big choir that comes in with these kind of sweeping ahs that are quite kind of operatic sounding in some ways. Yeah, there's like a high soprano singing above. And he's on saxophone, but he's not massively featured. He's just kind of leading the band in this beautiful rolling thing. And then it has this big swell, and then it kind of drops away, and the band has a little jam, just like Kamasi in the rhythm section, in this kind of soul feel. And yeah, it's a big journey.
an emotional journey.
Journeys are good.
Yeah, and it's a long journey, so strap in. The song was featured in the show Homeland.
Oh.
In like one of the, like Kamasi's performing on the stage.
Oh, yeah. Because Homeland used a lot of sort of jazz music. Yeah. And I've never actually watched it, but I've seen parodies of it, and it's all about it. And they sort of make fun of the fact that there's lots of like this sort of different kind of instrumental jazz playing, and she's always drinking wine and popping pills. I don't know. Anyway.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's like during some big character reveal moment, apparently.
Yeah.
But for those of you who aren't familiar with Kamasi Washington, you probably would have been familiar with the sound of his saxophone, because he's collaborated with so many artists. Herbie Hancock, George Duke, Snoop Dogg, Chaka Khan, Thundercat, Kendrick Lamar, so many people. I've talked about the Kendrick Lamar album To Pimp a Butterfly before on this podcast and on the hip hop episode, and Kamasi is the saxophone player playing on that album. So he's a huge crossover artist into a lot of genres, but hip hop is a big thing for him as well. Fusing those sounds of the harmony of jazz with the kind of feel of hip hop, which I love. All Music critic Tom Jurek says the album's chock full of refreshing, sophisticated ideas, all balanced by an emphatic inclusiveness that engages the listener at both musical and emotional levels.
Yeah.
Nice. That's so beautiful.
Yeah. Now I'm going to bring it home to Australia.
Yay.
Some Australian jazz.
Australian.
No American so far.
Sorry.
Oh, my. Oh, my God. So this song is called Sweethearts, and it's by Sam Anning, who's a double bass player from Australia. There's a couple of versions of this song out there, because he's played it with his trio previously, and potentially someone else has covered it. I'm pretty sure I've heard another version. Cannot remember who. But the version I'd like, please, to the powers that be, is him and Australian vocalist Kristen Barati. They did a duo album together. It was the first duo album they've done together, called Our Songs, Not Songs. And so it's just a bass and vocal whole album, which, you know...
Just bass and vocals.
Just double bass and vocals.
All right.
So very exposing. I mean, they're both beautiful players, like so melodic. So like the way that Sam, like the timbre of Sam's bass isn't like a real boomy bass. It's just really, really
so
melodic,
soft.
Lovely. Yeah. Yeah. It's very sweet. The album itself, Our Songs, Not Songs, it's titled after a Japanese poet, Ryokan Taigu, the poem goes like this. Who said our songs are songs? Our songs are not songs. When you know that our songs are not songs, then we can begin to discuss song. You go. And they were like, that's the title.
Grace is bringing so much poignancy to the podcast tonight.
Yeah. So I heard an interview with Sam Anning and Kristen. They were talking about this album and the songs that they've written on it or arranged. And Sam said that the time he wrote this song, it's this really simple, lovely bass riff. Do, 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 do. You know what? I think that's another song of his. You know what? Listen to the playlist. You'll figure it out. I may be confusing that with another song of his.
Bedtime.
Hey, get out of here. So he said he was doing his like modern jazz thesis or whatever at the time. I believe it was his master's, but don't quote me on that. Could have been his honors. But it was like really deep into like free jazz, and he just wanted this release of like just a nice sweet song. Doesn't have any complicated harmony. I can just chill out. And so he wrote this song. It's like a little reset,
like
palate cleanser.
He's gonna be my friend. I'm gonna get on.
We're gonna go meet Sam.
Yeah. So this is a really lovely song, and I am so excited for you guys to hear it. Mm. My very final choice.
Yes.
Is by prolific piano player Robert Glasper.
Mm.
I thought
I was going to say Billy Joel for one of these. Prolific
Billy Joel.
We're talking jazz today.
So Robert Glasper, I've chosen the song Butterfly from his 2009 album Double Booked. Now Robert Glasper is everything to me that I love about jazz, because he's this huge crossover artist between hip hop and jazz, and he really embodies both ideas. And he, you know, Jay Dilla is someone that you could compare him to in terms of the way that he marries both styles really beautifully. He's worked with Erykah Badu, Kanye West, Kendrick Lamar again, Mos Def, so many different people. And he has released albums on Blue Note Records, which is a really prestigious jazz record label. So he's really got like clout in that era, but also in this huge dynamic fusion and hip hop era. He's been nominated for 7 Grammys, and he's won 3 of those.
Hey.
Amazing.
He's also won an Emmy Award.
Oh my God.
He's got the ego.
He's got an egg.
So this is his 4th album, and the song I picked is Butterfly. Now the album has 2 parts to it, which is kind of like the 2 parts of him I think he must have felt at the time. The first half is the Robert Glasper Trio, which is like his jazz trio. It's a lot of more standard sounding swing, still like exciting arrangements and originals and stuff, but acoustic sounding jazz, like what you'd hear if you went to a jazz club. Then the second half is the Robert Glasper Experiment, and that's much more electronic. Electric bass is in there instead of double, and there's a lot of synths and like funk influenced tunes. So it's kind of like these 2 halves of himself on this album, and this song is from the second half, from the funk influence.
Oh, I like that.
It's got a vocoder on it, which is kind of cool.
I love that.
It's pretty exciting. It's actually a song written by Herbie Hancock that he's covered and put a vocoder on, called Butterfly.
Yes.
Beautiful. So to date, he's released 9 albums, and I mean, he's just going to keep churning them out, because, you know, he, as a prolific artist in jazz and hip hop, is responding to the culture and to the times, and there's just so much inspiration.
Especially right now. There's so much to say right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Speak on it.
So that's amazing.
Oh, that's so good. I was supposed to call you jazz. So good.
So good jazz. I'll
so
take
good
it.
Jazz. Love hearing it, and love just getting a little bit of the history as well of jazz and how it's all been influenced and how these artists have all been influenced. So that's really good. All right. So we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back with our favorite segment.
And we're back again. Hello.
Back again.
Yes, we is. All right. Well, we've had a education.
Yes.
Education.
On this beautiful episode of Chefology. And it's really, really interesting. After Grace's prolific, breakdown of her choices, we also got to choose a flop. So jazz music we don't like. Now, I was going to choose nearly the whole catalog. No, I was joking.
Oh,
so
much.
But let's start throw it over to Grace, because, oh no, let's actually go and tell you what the section is. It's called
It's a Flop.
And we're going to hear from, let's hear from Grace first.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, there's so much that I could have picked. There's plenty of stuff that I just don't care for.
Yep.
But I decided to go for a Charlie Parker tune. It's called Just Friends. It's from his Charlie Parker with Strings album.
Oh,
now, it's well known in the like 60, maybe pre-70s era of jazz, like 20s to 70s, that when you made it, you did an album with strings because that appealed to a white audience.
Right.
Of course.
And it was like, but it's also like, that's when you've sold out as well. Because, because you're whitewashing what? The shit yeah. out of the music.
I
and
can't wait
it's Charlie Parker with his bebop lines yes. and a string orchestra. Right. So stupid.
Well, I can't wait to perform my version of My Funny Valentine by strings now. Yeah. I am a seller.
Well, what did you say? Piano and strings. Yeah, tell you what.
And then it's like it meant that you'd made it to artists that got there because they'd been paid shit for their entire, yeah. being treated like shit, not allowed to play, yeah. like played for whites only things yeah, and whatever. Yeah. But then suddenly had been made it to a white audience. So it was a huge thing, but it's like also sell out there. Yeah.
Well,
I can't imagine that sounds good.
Bye, Charlie Parker.
I mean, some
Parker.
People like it, but I don't.
No,
so
yeah.
we're saying no to that song. How about you, Asami?
Well, I had trouble because I tend to like most jazz, and I also didn't have a lot of time. So I thought about love this woman as an actress. I think she's an amazing actress. Do not like her singing voice. So I just looked up Glenn Close, jazz. And I found her singing Send in the Clowns, and I said, that's it. That's my flop.
Send in the Clowns.
Which I have a very funny story with this song. So when,
a classic jazz standard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Send yeah. in the Clowns. The most classic.
When I was in high school, so I don't know if they do this here in Australia, but in America, high schools can be adopted by corporations or organizations, meaning that they either provide some sort of funding or, I don't know, they could provide anything, tutorial service, whatever. So my high school was adopted by the IRS. I know. Yes, definitely. I have no idea what the IRS did for us. No, like, because I mean, I
did
went
the school
to
get a tax break. Like, what's
maybe like I went to a magnet school. It was the top high school in the state. It's in the top 100 of the country. So I'm like, I don't know why the IRS wanted to adopt us, but anyway, they did.
Oh, that's so weird.
And so the jazz band, I was in jazz band, and they asked us to perform at the ceremony, you know, to recognize that the IRS was adopting us. So my jazz band teacher, you know, he came in, he's like, guys, we're gonna have to play the ceremony. I'm just trying to think, what should we play? And so I said, let's play Send in the Clowns. There was laughter for a good 10 minutes. Because, yes, I was the class clown.
Oh, I was, in case you didn't get that mystery.
I was the class clown.
Actually, Send of the Clowns is from, I think, A Little Night Music. It's a Sondheim musical.
Yes, yes.
And I know that it's, like, out of context, probably one of his most famous, like, songs.
Totally, yeah.
But
yeah.
in context, I actually never found it fit in the show for me. I was yeah. like, this is a lot of emotions.
Yeah, there's a lot of emotions.
This is a lot for someone that, just, like, wants to have an affair. Or so. I remember just, it's also a weird show in general. Like,
right.
Sort of thing.
I don't know the show.
Yeah, I remember seeing it a couple of years ago because, I think it was the Queensland's the Brisbane Orchestra or something put it on at the Princess Theatre in the middle of summer.
Ew!
And so everyone's like sweating watching the show. It's really really interesting. But yeah, but like for me, like it never made sense to me. That song.
It's a weird song.
But I know a lot of famous people like are known for that song, like Judi Dench and you know, you watch.
It's a very heart wrenching sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I just thought I just liked the title because I was like the IRS.
Well, I'm not really like a huge Sondheim fan, but I try not to talk about that too often. I'll get ripped by the musical theater community.
That's okay. Yeah, yeah. I went on Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know, and I told them I don't know anything about Sondheim.
Oh!
The daggers.
I do like Into the Woods. I really, really like Into the Woods. Yeah. But I think
I feel that show is like 45 minutes too long.
Oh, an hour. How about an hour and 45 minutes too long?
It's 2 hours too long. They should just never made the
but
show.
But you know how I think when they were doing like previews like out of town, people thought that Act One was the end of the show because it finished.
Yes.
And apparently like Sondheim and James Lapine were like running out the door saying, "There's a second act. Stay. You don't have to go again." Yeah.
I know. It's for me. It's a boring musical. I just couldn't. Anyway.
I wish. Anyway. So.
What's your flop, Josh?
Now the reason why I chose this as my flop because I feel like this is like now I'm probably calling myself out on this as well. It's like you go up to someone and go, "Oh, can you sing some jazz?" Yeah, absolutely. Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. I was going to choose this or The Way You Look Tonight, but I actually love The Way You Look Tonight, as in I think it's a really beautiful song. And yes, so Fly Me to the Moon is my flop.
Nice. I would, I don't enjoy singing this because it feels really cheesy, but I love listening to the Frank Sinatra version.
Yeah, me too.
Every now and then it's like it so is beautifully
especially
done.
Because when the horns,
not singing myself.
The horns come in so abruptly. So it's like, oh, it's Fly Me to the Moon, and you go, oh, like
because I think it's on the Count Basie album with him, right?
Oh,
is that the
know.
One it is? I'm it's like, sure. yeah, it's beautiful.
It is horny.
Yeah, yeah. It is. And that's the best thing about, even like, you know, when we're talking about like the Lady Gaga thing where like, you know, cheek to cheek, the band is really the star.
Oh, they're amazing arrangements.
The musicians are like the highest level caliber of musicians you can get for a session,
for
you know
sure.
what I mean? Like, that's why I love that. Well, and that's it. And guys, that's the end of the season.
Oh my God, it is the end of the season.
I mean, tune in on December because there could be just like a special episode.
Might have a little.
I mean, in December. I mean, I don't know what.
Might hear some hooves on your roof.
I don't know.
You might hear some what?
I don't know. What the fuck did you call me, bitch? But it, yeah, so there could, stay tuned because the next couple of months in December, there could be a certain theme.
A little something under the
tree. Something.
I think, you know, I'm going to, like, you know, the queen of festive could definitely be involved in this one. And yeah, but thank you so much. We started this podcast back in April. Happened to be during Queensland's lockdown.
Yes,
which is so funny because like 1 week later, I saw that video about all those Aussie artists being like, "Please don't start another fucking podcast."
Like, yeah, I was like, "Who are you?"
Yeah, exactly. Shut up, Deborah Melman. Shut up, Osher Ginsburg. Like, whatever. Yeah. So, but thank you for every single person that has tuned in every week with us. You know, we started out with Liam. Shout out to Liam as well because he was a part of the start of the season as well, and then Gracie taking over after a little while as well. And so we're so glad that we can really talk about what we love the most, which is music. And shout out to That's Not Canon Productions and Zane Weber for approaching us to begin with.
Oh, thanks,
because I'm sure he was like, "Who can talk about pop music?"
Nobody I know.
He's like Asami and Josh DeVetta.
Yes.
sort of thing. And yeah, so we're so grateful for everyone. We love all the messages and all the comments that you guys have shared with us over the over time. Thank you for the emails as well. Like, we really, really have enjoyed it. This is a love project, so it really is the highlight of my week when we get to just sit down for a couple of hours and talk about
music.
All right, well, my name is Josh DeVetta. We have Asabi Goodman.
Hey.
Gracie Mack, thank you for coming into the lab with us. And we will possibly hear from you in a festive month of December. All right. All right. Peace.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello. I hope you enjoyed / are enjoying / will enjoy whatever podcast I'm in right now. Once you're finished with it, why not pop on over to Broadway and Other Kiwi Dreams, a podcast exploring the lives and minds of theatre practitioners in and around the New Zealand performing arts industry. Join me, James Shearer, in a deep dive into what makes this industry tick. You'll hear conversations with some of the top names in the Aotearoa performing arts scene and beyond, from the up-and-coming to the big Shorty Street stars. So, if you're into the performing arts, come on over to Broadway and Other Kiwi Dreams. Because no two journeys are the same, and wherever you are in yours, I hope we can inspire you to soldier on and keep following your Kiwi dreams.
That's Not Canon Productions podcast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thank you. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.